Hello and welcome back to Dukebox. I'm Lucas Ferguson, the station manager, and you join me today for a very special one-off podcast with Deputy Head of Co-Curricular, Ian Sutcliffe. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Very good. Yourself?
Yes, I'm not too bad. It's been a fun morning of licensing for me. I suspect you've had even more fun to deal with. But we're going to talk a little bit today about something actually you wanted to bring to the table, because we tapped you up a little while ago, and you very graciously came back to us, and you said, well, I've got a bit of experience in boxing, and, you know, why don't we talk about that? So tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, so I first got into boxing around about the age of 11. So I think I kind of watched a Rocky movie and thought, I fancy doing the training aspects of boxing. So I went down to...
Hang on, you went for the training aspects. You didn't look at the big glamour fights and think, oh, that's what I want. You thought, oh, I really like the look of running around in these woods for a bit.
Yeah, I fancied going to Siberia and training in the snow.
Oh, well, that's fair enough, yeah.
But yeah, so I was 11 years old and I went and joined a club called Leeds Bay St. Patrick's, which was a boxing gym below a church. And so I sort of went there as an 11-year-old. It was quite intimidating when I first walked in, and from, you know, instantly fell in love with the sport. And I boxed for about 3 years as a junior amateur. And then about the age of 14, I gave it up for a few years because I was starting to then concentrate on cricket. I sort of discontinued my boxing, and then fortunately, when I got a place at Oxford, I took it up again as an 18-year-old, when, you know, my first year at university.
So my next question was going to be, why did you choose boxing? But was it the dedication? Did you just really want to go and travel to somewhere so you could go and train there? Was that what got you in?
I mean, I've always liked to push myself, you know, fitness wise, and set yourself challenges. And I think what I loved about boxing is it really is the ultimate test. You know, you've got to really sort of I suppose have that kind of courage, that bravery to put yourself on the line, to really sort of prepare in the right way, because there's no hiding place. And I suppose in team sports, there are times where, you know, if you don't get past the ball in football, it's kind of you're not involved in the game. You know, if you lose it, you know you might not have had a direct impact on the game. Whereas in the boxing ring, it is down to you. It's down to your own performance. You've got no, you can't make any excuses. So I suppose I think that kind of challenge of putting yourself through your paces in your training, and then having to perform and knowing that there's, you know, you are ultimately in charge of your destiny. I think that's what appealed to me about the sport of boxing.
And then you also took up cricket, where you get to sit in a pavilion for a whole day and watch everyone else do everything. Was that the counterbalance for you?
You know, I actually think the similarities between boxing and cricket are quite strong. So in terms of when you're sat in the dressing room and you're preparing to face Wasim Akram or Shoaib Akhtar, you know, people who are bowling the ball at 100 miles at your head, 100 miles an hour, sorry, at your head, you know, there's a fear element to it, and you have to psychologically prepare yourself for that battle. And I suppose the same thing applies to stepping into a boxing ring. You have to go through the same mental routines before you step into the ring. So I always felt that my background in boxing helped my cricket. You know, I would be as nervous stepping into a boxing ring as I was facing those quick bowls. But because I'd done it on numerous occasions, I think that gives you confidence that, you know, yes, it's fine to feel a degree of fear before you step into the arena. That is normal, and that is healthy, because without fear, you don't have your reactions won't be quick enough. That fear helps you. It's your friend. So actually sort of that mental rehearsing is critically important for success in whether we're talking about boxing or cricket.
And you mentioned sort of at the start of all that you grew up in Leeds. Now I'm trying to bite my tongue here because I'm a Sheffield lad myself. But how was it training there? Was it quite a rough area? Were the people there quite rough, or was it more just sort of, well, how was it?
Yeah, I mean it was in one of the rougher parts of Leeds, sort of near Chapel Town area. So anyone familiar with the Leeds area, you know, would realise that, you know, it was quite a rough area. But the people inside the gym were fantastic. You know, yes, it felt quite intimidating when you first arrived, but you know, the great thing about sport, it does bring people together. And I think when people see your dedication and your discipline and your determination, that unites. And I think when you have that kind of shared experience, you can build really good relationships with your fellow sports people.
And learning at that age, I know I did a little bit of cricket when I was younger, although I don't think I did it to quite the level that you managed it. But I remember when I started, the first thing I was taught was footwork. It was always sort of, you've got to learn where to put your feet before you learn where to do anything else. Was it something similar in boxing? What were the first things you were taught? Because everyone sees the sort of the complete end product that you see in your Anthony Joshua's and your Klitschko's. Yeah. Where does that all start?
Yeah, I mean, I think transfer of weight is really important in any sport. So, sort of having a strong base in boxing is critical. That's where your power comes from. And it's that ability to keep a strong base and transfer your weight depending on, which punch you are throwing. You know, the starting point for boxing, like most sports, it is your kind of your stance, your kind of base position, and from there then you learn more complicated maneuvers.
Without wishing to cast aspersions on your age, I think you would it be fair to say that you grew up in a time where the mental side of the game wasn't quite as emphasized in the training? Because you know, that's, like you said, it's a massive part of the sport. It's arguably the biggest part of the sport.
In terms of boxing,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure. It's sort of such a big part of the game even now. I mean, I don't think necessarily the training methods in boxing have been quite as kind of developed as in other sports. So I think there is a kind of still a bit of an old school approach to lots of boxing gyms. Where they probably don't actually sort of spend enough time on mental skills training. And as you're right, you know, when you look at performance, you know, whether you're talking about boxing or other sports or across the arts, you know, it's so much of it is actually in that kind of mental preparation and getting the kind of mental side of that activity right.
No, I completely agree, because I was thinking while I was doing some research for this interview, watching boxing, you can almost sort of tell as they're walking down to the ring who really wants it. And if you can tell who wants it, you can more or less guess who's going to win the fight. I'm surprised it's not more emphasized.
Yeah, I mean, I think most fighters would say that they want to win.
it's
just, I suppose, the difficulty is being in a place when you step into the ring that you actually feel calm, that you actually feel, you actually trust your preparation, trust that actually, you know, what you've practiced, you'll be able to deliver on. And I suppose some fighters, when they step in the ring, maybe they don't trust the process and they concentrate too much on their opponent's strengths. And if you worry too much about what your opponent's going to do, then that stops you from being in the moment. And I think sort of when you see those ring entrances and you observe those boxers in the zone, I think that's really talking about that they're actually present, and then they're not worrying about the strength of their opponent. They're actually just concentrating in the moment.
So how did you do it then? How did you sort of get yourself out of that potentially quite negative headspace of I need to do everything I've got to do and I need to stop doing everything that was really bad? Because I'm sure that's, I mean, aside from just being applicable to boxing, where it's very real, an immediate benefit is not being knocked out very quickly. But it's also something that I imagine is quite transferable to a lot of other aspects of life as well.
Absolutely. I think a key part of your preparation is your visualization beforehand. So spending hours visualizing what it will feel like to step into the ring, or what it feels like to be facing Shohabhata on a cricket pitch. So you've gone through the kind of mental rehearsal of what's going to happen hundreds and hundreds of times, you know, when you've got those free moments during the day. And I think training your mind to, I suppose, rehearse what's going to happen, it means that when it actually the time arrives, you feel a sense of calmness, because you feel that you've actually prepared for that moment. I mean, that's when it's operating at its best, where you're visualizing what's going to happen. You've got lots of positive self-talk. So whenever you do have a negative thought, you quickly reassert the positive self-talk in response. But in reality, there are always moments in your sporting career where the negative talk gets the better of you. You know, so sometimes you do step into a boxing ring or on the pitch when you aren't in the best frame of mind, where you're not actually, not actually in the moment. So it takes a lot of practice. You don't always get it right, but it's a skill that you can improve.
Right. I think it's time that we probe your mind a little further, because before we started this, I asked you to send us some music to play in this show. And the first piece that you sent me was Bittersweet Symphony. For the record, I love all of these choices. I think all of the choices you've picked are fantastic. So I guess you've got my seal of approval. But why that one?
I just think it's an amazing track. And I just remember at university just always listening to it. So it's probably my favourite song of all time.
When you were giving us your introduction to sort of your background in boxing, you mentioned that you went on to do it at university. How different did that feel? So, firstly, starting up at university, where I imagine the competition level was of a much higher caliber, but also having had that sort of break beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, it was easier starting at university, because I'd still had 3 or 4 years of junior amateur experience, and most people, when they box at university, they have never taken up boxing before. So I was sort of more experienced than sort of 95% of the other students there. That sort of gave me confidence, and I was fortunate in that very first term, I think it was in the December, I managed to win the British University's light middleweight championship. So straight away, I was involved in the sort of amateur fights, and I think I had maybe four or five fights in that first term.
Blimey, four or five fights in a term?
Yeah, because in the for that British University's competition, it's obviously a knockout stage, so you have, I think I had three fights in that competition over 2 days.
Wait, so you did two fights on one day on one of them then?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. And you get these guys who don't fight for 6 months of a year.
Yeah. I mean, they do look after you, though. So if you've had a hard fight and they don't think that you're in a position to have another fight that day, then they won't allow you to box. So it depends on, how much kind of punishment, as it were, you have in your earlier fights.
Do you think then that if there was the possibility of a forfeit hanging over somebody, do you think there'd be people who tried to maybe fight through things that they shouldn't have done? No, that's it's a big issue, especially these days with CTE and concussion awareness becoming more and more prevalent.
Yeah, I imagine that kind of competition, the sort of rules of that competition has changed now. So I don't think they will allow more than one fight on a given day. So, I think the safety is critically important. So they'll make a judgment on that basis.
It's a great paradox of boxing, isn't it? The sport that's so inherently, and I'll quote unquote, violent, is so obsessed with safety these days.
Yeah.
I suppose it has to be, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've got to keep everyone safe who's fighting.
I suppose that's the humanitarian approach. There's a more cynical line of thinking, which says that there's just too much money in it for anyone to be getting seriously injured.
No other fighter would want anyone to get hurt in the ring. You know, I remember sort of growing up and seeing fights. The Jerry McLaren fight comes to mind, and it's just awful to think about. With the sort of development of sports science and greater understanding of sports injuries, I think it's critically important we get that right.
So that was your first term. So your first term, you win the, was that the big one? Was that the big one to win?
That and the varsity match, yes.
Did you win the varsity match?
I lost my first varsity match.
So you kept that hidden from me.
Yeah. So my first varsity match was, I was actually for, I think he was 34 years old. He was an MBA student at Cambridge. So he was much older than me, but it was a very, very close fight, and I lost on a split decision.
Oh.
So...
was it split, sort of one of the judges going for a draw, or did one of the judges actually give it to you?
I can't quite remember. I think, I can't remember the details. I just remember it being a split.
I just want to know how close you were and how agonising it felt. That's all.
I mean, it was a horrible, boring fight, because I was a counterboxer and he also was a counterboxer. And I think he hit me about four times and I hit him about four times. So it was just one of those fights that, you know, you didn't want to watch.
Was this while you were at university that you met the Hollyoaks then?
No, so this was probably around about 2001 when I started to spend quite a bit of time with the Hollyoaks in my off season. So I used to travel to Perth and play club cricket out there and train with the Hollyoaks in at a local boxing gym out there.
I had played
against the Hollyoaks when I was at Leicestershire and they were at Surrey. So I sort of knew them as competitors, but in terms of getting to know them really well, it wasn't until those winters spent in Perth.
I should mention for the listenership who might be a little too young to remember the Hollyoaks, we are not talking about the Channel 5 soap opera or soap drama, whatever you'd want to call it. This is Ben and Adam Hollyoak, who are both cricketers and also boxers, apparently.
Yeah, Adam was a boxer, and actually when he finished playing cricket, had a few professional fights.
And how was it? Wait, did he do boxing before he did cricket,
he hadn't had any competitive fights, but he would sort of train regularly as a way of keeping fit.
So in a way, you actually had quite a lot of similarities to him, but almost sort of like an inverse path, but one sort of led you down the same sort of routes.
Yeah. So when we used to play against each other, we, you know, invariably, particularly when I was at Lancashire and it would be raining, we'd have a discussion about boxing. And you know, I knew he had an interest in the sport, and he knew that I'd fought competitively. So it was really sort of through those discussions that we decided to train together over the winter. And, you know, we ended up pretty much going to our local to the local boxing gym every day out there, and that was a kind of, you know, our way of preparing for the cricket season.
Preparing for the cricket season in Australian winter. Oh, yeah. You know, I'd love to experience that. Was it still just as warm down there? I'm sure.
Well, no. So it was English winter, but Australian
summer. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it was always very hot in Perth.
How long did that go on for? How long did you train with him for?
Probably over a kind of 3-4 year period. So every sort of winter I'd go to Perth for maybe 3 or 4 months. So during those 3 or 4 months each year, we would train together.
Did you feel sort of the progress and the regression after each fight, and then after each break, after each fight? Or was it more just sort of casual sparring, as it were?
Yeah, it was casual sparring. So by this point, I haven't fought competitively since I left university. So, you know, since the age of 20, 21, I haven't had a competitive fight. So from that point on, it was just really about kind of training. So when we're out there, yeah, we used to spar most days, but we'd never spar particularly hard. You know, it would always be we'd wear 20 pound gloves, headgear. You know, we weren't interested in hurting each other, just more about sort of keeping fit.
And then obviously with the Hollyoaks, we end up arriving at the crash that took Ben Hollyoaks' life. I suppose, how did you react to that, and how did Adam react to that, and then how did the sports community as a whole sort of come to terms with that and help him through it?
It was obviously a tragic situation, and I did my best to support Adam and his family, and the whole cricket community came together, you know, Ben was a fantastic player, and he would have gone on to achieve great things for England. So, you know, it was such a sad loss. He was an amazing guy, and you know, had amazing spirit, and very positive individual. So, yeah, no, he's greatly missed, and the cricket community came together well to support Adam.
What do you think his legacy is now?
I mean, he's someone who played the game in the right spirit, somebody who had no fear on the cricket field. You know, he's somebody who gave a lot of joy to people in his short life. So, you know, very positive impact.
And I assume that helped the community come together and band together afterwards and do great things together.
Yeah, he was very, very liked, very much liked, and so was Adam. So actually supporting the family was really important.
Do you still keep in touch with them?
We still keep in touch. Adam is based in Queensland now, but when he comes over to the UK, yeah, we always still catch up.
You still spar him?
No, we haven't boxed for quite a few years. I think I'm getting a bit too old for that now.
Well, let's have a little bit more music now. The next track you've picked for us is Yellow by Coldplay. I've got to admit, Coldplay they're not so much a guilty pleasure band as they've kind of surpassed being a guilty pleasure for me. Do you get any stick for liking them?
Not really, no. No, but now
well, you get some now.
I love Coldplay. I saw them in concert at the Bolton Reebok Stadium, and they were fantastic. So no, I think Yellow is their best hit.
Touched on this in your last answer, but the next question I had, and one that I hadn't actually prepared to ask you until it crossed my mind last night, was, do you miss boxing?
Do I miss boxing? No, not really, to be honest.
Because my next question was going to be, would you ever consider doing it again?
Yeah, you could ask me that. No, it'd be absolutely not. Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. What changed then? Was it just sort of wear and tear, different priorities?
No, I mean, I never wanted to fight professionally. The thing about boxing is, you always, unless your name is Floyd Mayweather, you're always going to come across somebody who's better than you. And the unfortunate thing about boxing, when somebody is better than you, is that it's not a great feeling in the ring.
No, I can imagine that.
Whereas in cricket, if someone's better than you, then you get out cheaply, but you can survive that. But boxing's different.
And I suppose part of the rigors of boxing comes in the months of preparation that these professional fighters do. I imagine that wasn't very appealing to someone like you, who had the whole cricket season to go through.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to fight properly, then you have to pay a lot of attention to your training. You have to train very, very hard. And you know, to do that over a period of time is a big sacrifice. It's a big commitment.
Yeah, and all of the dietary changes as well.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that would have been an issue for you.
It'd be fine if I was fighting heavyweight, but as a kind of light middleweight, initially, and then a middleweight, you obviously have to make your weight.
Did you bulk up to middleweight, or did you slim down to light middleweight?
I wouldn't necessarily call it bulking up. I think when I first in my first year at university, I was naturally walking around at the kind of light middleweight weight, and then I sort of put on a little bit of muscle in the next year, but easily made middleweight. So I was actually very comfortable at the weight.
Your title, if I'm right, that was light middleweight, wasn't it?
Yes. Which is, it was 71 kilograms.
Was there a notable difference in fighting people at those two different weight ranges? Or was it too narrow at that point to really tell sort of stylistic differences, like you might see between a flyweight and a light heavyweight, for example?
The biggest difference was just the strength difference. You know, 3 kilograms doesn't sound a great deal, but actually 3 kilograms of muscle actually does make a difference. So that, you know, when you're stepping into the ring, the people you're fighting do look a lot bigger. So yeah, I think. But in terms of style, very similar. Light middleweight, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's a nice way to fight it, because it's sort of the fighters are pretty quick, but they also can throw a decent punch as well.
Just a little bit more of an all-rounder weight, as it were.
Yeah, I think so.
While we're on the subject of sort of the technicalities of boxing, as it were, as someone who really seriously got into the sport around last November or so, when I had an absolutely rabid co-worker who wouldn't shut up about boxing, I watched a few fights last year, and I was astonished that more people don't work the body, because the way I see it, and I see this a lot in boxing, but also I see this in mixed martial arts as well, is that the people who work the body and the core generally tend to do better. They tend to win more because they've worn their opponent down and they just can't fight back anymore.
Yeah,
why is that not more prevalent? Is that just a choice, and is that a choice by necessity, or is that just sort of, is that something that goes out the window in the moment?
I think sort of throwing shots to the body is one of the hardest things to do in boxing, because if you throw a shot to the body from distance, so either kind of a jab or a right hand to the body from distance, it's not a very effective punch, and it makes you susceptible to an overhand right. So the only way to really throw a kind of punishing body shot is to get in close. And to get in close, you need to be able to slip your opponent's jab or slip your opponent's right cross. So it's kind of a risky maneuver to fight on the inside, because you've got to be able to slip punches as they come. Now, if traditionally sort of the shorter fighters who would prefer to fight on the inside, because their arms aren't as long as taller fighters, you know, that's a key part of their armory. But if you're talking about a fighter like myself who was quite tall for the weight, I would prefer to keep the fight on the outside. So if you're trying to keep the fight on the outside, then your ability to throw body shots is reduced. So you look at a star like Muhammad Ali. He didn't actually throw many shots to the body. You know, he fought mainly through right jabs and right crosses from distance. Whereas when he fought Joe Frazier was all about trying to get on the inside and trying to get shots off to the body. So it very much depends upon your physical characteristics and your strengths.
And on the technicalities, I imagine sort of the wisdom you've just imparted takes a little while to build up that sort of that database of knowledge of things that you can and can't do, as depending on your skill sets, which makes me wonder, how do you feel about this seemingly increasing trend of celebrities getting involved, seemingly with very little notice or preparation in the boxing world? We've seen it, obviously, you know, we saw Conor McGregor, but he's got a lot of experience in fighting in general. But then we've seen other celebrities trying it. We saw Freddie Flintoff try it a few years ago. Mm. You'll have an interesting perspective on this because Adam Holyoake took it up. So what's your feeling about that?
I suppose mixed feelings. You know, on one hand, you know, everyone has the right to be able to pursue a sport and activity that they want to do, and that, you know, and actually sort of going through that training program and that you know, stepping into the ring and that kind of courage required to do that and overcoming your fear, you know, there's a, you know, that's can have a big impact on someone and improve their confidence level. So, you know, I understand why those people choose to do it, but on the other hand, it worries me because, you know, I don't want to see anyone get hurt in a boxing ring, and you know, if you're inexperienced and haven't put in years of training, then, you know, there's potential for it to go wrong. So it has to be managed very, very closely. It has to, you know, you have to make sure that there are very similar levels of abilities between the two fighters. And I know when I first started boxing at the age of 11, actually those matchups were very, very fair. So you'd always be matched with somebody who was, you know, weighed within 1 or 2 pounds of you, had similar boxing records, because the last thing you want to have in a boxing ring is a mismatch. Because, you know, when there is a mismatch, that's when people can get hurt. So it's making sure that actually it's managed in a very professional way.
I suppose that the other thing that makes the mismatches more likely at that sort of celebrity level is that name value suddenly becomes a much bigger issue than, say, fighting ability or size or weight. Whereas obviously, you know, in the gym underneath the church in Leeds, you know, you're all pretty much sort of just the same batch of youngsters all training against each other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's just making sure that you know, when you step into the ring, you're as prepared as you can be. You know, you've had access to really high quality training, and there's both fighters that not looking to not knock each other out. It's more about you know, keeping it light, you know, entertaining.
Right. Let's pick your next piece of music now. Let's switch things up a bit. Yeah, the next one you've got up is Apricots. Tell me why. I want to know.
Apricots. I heard it on the radio a couple of weeks ago and loved it. And sort of during lockdown, I've been going out for runs, you know, every other night. And Apricots is a song that's sort of been keeping me going on those runs.
This is a recent love, is it then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I see. You sort of pick one from each era. You've got Bittersweet for your old timer. You've got Yellow for your old timer, and you've got Apricots for your new timer.
Correct.
Now, as we're nearing the end, I wanted to have a discussion with you about giving up. And I bring this up because, as I mentioned earlier, I've been following boxing for a while, but more seriously of late. And the fight between Daniel Dubois and Joe Joyce was a big talking point in my former workplace, because I had a lot of friends who were very angry that Dubois took a knee and ended the fight of his own volition, and to use their words, that he gave up. As someone who's practiced boxing, how do you feel about that?
I think the criticism is harsh. I think anyone who has the courage to step into the ring needs to be respected. And, you know, when fighters have taken a knee or pulled out, you know, I think you have to respect them still. You know, I think nobody really knows what a fighter is experiencing, you know, and there have been instances where fighters have been hurt, even though they outwardly haven't appeared to be hurt. So I always think you have to give fighters the benefit of the doubt, and you know, accept their decision. You know, we shouldn't sort of criticize any sports person who decides enough is enough. You know, if they, you know, in a fight, if they think they're not going to win and can't carry on, then, you know, we have to respect that decision.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like we've mentioned earlier, it's all about the health and the safety these days. And I suspect that may.
I do think it's an interesting question though, because, you know, why do people love boxing? They love it because they see somebody putting themselves on the line. They see that spirit, and you know, I think that's always in the forefront of people's minds. So when they see something in a fight where maybe that doesn't satisfy that need, they criticize it without really fully understanding what that fighter is going through.
And I suppose that's sort of, there's a little bit of sensationalism in there, perhaps, yeah. Especially with the rise of social media, and, you know, and you see all these YouTube clips and Twitter highlights of spectacular knockouts from this event over in Dubai, or in this small event somewhere else, and everyone sort of starts to get the mindset that these clips that we see all the time of the superhuman feats, they start becoming the norm again. And then there's the renewed push, oh, well, I've got to push myself beyond these seemingly normal feats to become the best. And it's this relentless drive towards, well, depending on how you look at it, drive towards the top or the bottom.
No, agreed. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
We've talked a lot about boxing and what it's done for you. What can it do for everyone here at Wellington? What can we as a family learn from boxing, in your opinion?
I think sort of the best thing about boxing is the training regime. You know, I think it's a really fun activity to get fit. So at Wellington, I run X Challenge, and part of X Challenge involves using pad, you know, doing pad work, you know, boxing exercises within the routine, and I think every student who's participated in X Challenge has loved that element of it. You know, it's a really good way of keeping fit. It's a really good way of challenging yourself. And I think, you know, in reality, only a very, very small percentage of people want to actually step into a boxing ring and actually spar, you know, because that involves being hit in the nose, and not everybody likes that. But the actual, you know, take a step back from that, and the actual training involved, you know, I think it's a brilliant way of keeping fit.
Have you ever considered doing a little charity match for Wellington?
Well, the question would be who again?
Who dares step in with you? I don't know. Do we have any particular aspiring boxers here?
I don't. Nobody I know of.
Nobody. Everyone's keeping quiet about it. Maybe they're hoping to surprise you one day. Usurp you in the ring with all the cameras on you.
But I'm far too old to be stepping into a boxing ring.
Okay, I've got one more question for you, and it's my curiosity getting the better of me. I don't know if ring entrances and ring walk music were much of a thing while you were fighting at Oxford. Were they?
No.
No.
They're not at amateur level. It doesn't really.
I thought not. Ideal world. You know, there's a, assuming that indeed fighting professionally was your ideal world, you're in the O2 Arena. There's a baying crowd chanting your name.
Yeah.
Lights go down. Bruce Buffer's in the ring. What's your nickname?
What's my nickname? Oh, my gosh.
See, we agreed before this that I was going to ask him about his ring walk music, but I realised that I didn't know what your nickname would be.
I'd probably have to say Sugar Ray Sutcliffe, just because I remember when I was playing against Middlesex, facing Phil Tufnell, who's the ex-England left-arm spinner. He knew that I boxed them. Throughout my innings, he just kept calling me Sugar Ray.
I can imagine him doing that. In that, I will actually ask you the question you expected. What would your ring walk music be?
I would go for LL Cool J, Mama Said Knock You Out.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More a solo. But tonight, don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years, I'm rocking my pants. What's up with the fear? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion. Overpowering, over the competition. I'm towering, wrecking shop. When I drop these lyrics, that'll make you call the cops. Don't you dare stare, you better move. Don't ever compare me to the rest, that'll all get sliced and diced. Competition's paying the price.
Just for the title.
I actually think it's a great tune, and I when I was working out with my brother growing up, we always used to put it on in the garage. I used to have a punch bag in my garage, so you know, when we'd go out there on the night, we'd turn this music on, and this would sort of you know, get us in the mood to train hard.
And would you put a little video up on the screen behind you of your mum telling you to knock him out, just to try and get in their minds?
Probably not, there.
Would you not approve? Well, I think that brings us about to the end. Once again, thank you very much to Ian Sutcliffe for joining us for this.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
And I hope that everyone's doing well. And I hope that we'll be able to see you again very soon. Take care.